Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Enterprise Sales Development Podcast, brought to you by Cyence Technologies. We interview outbound leaders at fast growth businesses to learn their secrets and bring you actionable insights. Thanks for joining us this week.
Hey, everyone. Great to have you with us this week. We're here with Justin Michael, an author, a consultant, a futurist, and a sales guru, in my opinion. He calls himself a Salesborg, and I'll let him tell you more about what that means exactly, but really excited to speak with you today, Justin, especially with that new book that you have coming out, Tech-Powered Sales, Achieve Superhuman Sales Skills. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much. So I'll start with a little comic relief. I do like to say dark guru, right? Because it's like the fitness industry. It's like, you know, 7-minute abs. If you just, you know, do some Zumba or Taibo with me, where you're going to kill your quota, you know, within minutes or whatever. Like, I get people send me the Borgs because it's Seller Cyborg. Sometimes they send this, the Iron Man or the Iron Human, right, to open up Iron Man for all. I will say that there was a funny version of the book got printed with a cover where it said a chive. And so I was going to do like a version of the onion and be like, just somehow get a cooking analogy for recipes, because what are we doing? We're like short order cooks, or in some ways we're like a chef. Yeah. I mean, it's a huge honor to be introduced that way. I sometimes feel like Kurt Cobain, because I didn't 5 years ago think I would be a sales trainer or have a book at all. You know, I just was obsessed with trying to get the result. Just actually, how do I get the meeting? And I just, at a certain point, I was in these companies and no one had heard their name and I was under-resourced. And I'm like, you know, this is where I had the knack. CEOs would sit down with me and say, you know, in 20 years, you just have this knack. Like, you always get meetings. Well, how do you? And it was my theme as I went through companies. I'd just be the person bringing the fish by the boat. So when the technology revolution hit, that was just like, you know, the big Bertha driver for me. I always talk about Tiger Woods, you know. I'm sure buying the titanium driver is good, but if you don't have a good golf technique, it'll just make you slice into the trees even faster. So yeah, I wrote this book called Tech Powered Sales with Tony J. Hughes. I quoted Eric Quantstrom in it, the CMO of Cyence. And the reason I quoted Eric is because I do believe that, first, he's a marketing leader and he had been, I believe, the CMO of Kite Desk. And he's the first person to tell me, you know what, all this sales stuff is just what marketing was doing 10 years ago, right? This idea, we're going to specialize. Wow. We're going to have salespeople that do one thing and not another thing. And he's like, well, wait a second. You don't have the CMO doing the SEO. They're not doing the branding. There's like, you know, what with Coca-Cola, it's like hundreds of agencies. But in sales, strangely, we have this position where it's like low tech and we're not really sure who's doing what. And like, they figured out SDR and then it kind of stopped. It's like, okay, we're going to have these kids be in the SDR, and then we're going to have these, like, you know, gray hair folks who, you know, they all have 20 years of experience and they don't really have much tech. And so there's a lot of ageism and weirdness, but you know what? It's great. Everyone can learn from each other and come together, and there can be sub-specialization where what you're great at becomes the forte, and the platforms you're using, you don't have to buy 20 of them. You can buy a few or you can create your own. So we're talking about that today, but that's all been inspired really by talks with, you know, Eric as a friend and contemporary over the years. And, you know, it's also, I'm a sales guy talking to a marketing leader. So that's a big thing for my shtick is like, we got to start talking. Just because you're an SDR doesn't mean the marketing team is a monthly meeting. Go get to know marketing. They can help you.
Boy, isn't that the truth? And you know, I always get a lot of value out of the conversations that we have, Justin, because, you know, I think we push each other in a number of ways, which, you know, really brings me to kind of like the opening promise of your book, which is to really reveal the strategies and techniques that enable people, primarily SDRs, to break through, reach difficult, hard to reach, and for this podcast audience, enterprise buyers, right? Like, those are the targets. Why don't you give us some of, like, kind of the highlights, if you will, or some of the strategies that you think would be, without having us to obviate and not buy the book, but like the things that you think would be really attractive for a lot of people to be thinking about that they're not.
Yeah. There's a lot of myths in sales right now. The techniques that I built, you have to see what was my position, right? I was a VP of sales and an RVP. I typically sold software that was MarTech or AdTech geared at enterprise. And because you're in a highly matrixed organization, they don't know their buying process. And when you go after a massive company, I won't name one, but a Fortune 5000 company, there's often 50 VPs of marketing, you know, 100 people in IT with overlapping skills. How do you get in there? If you email them all at once, you get your domain blocked. If you automate and send, you know, 20 email messages into IT, they'll mark you as spam. So like pure automation and scale and using all these platforms usually gets a bad name. So the first myth is like, it doesn't work. I was an AE and a VP for the last, I've been managing teams for 10 years, but I always saw myself as an SDR because I had to crack top funnel. There was never enough pipeline between the inbound and the SDR team, or I was coaching the SDR team or a team while I was working, but I was hunting with a massive quota. So there's no way I couldn't prospect. The big realization is this: everyone has a stack. And whether you're MacGyver with your Frankenstack, and it's like, you know, you've got a bobby pin and an umbrella and you've got a hot wire and nuclear sub, or you're in a big company and you have like too much stacks. Like, we have outreach and we have these three data sources and we have all this automation, but it's so much and you don't know which ones to use and what's on. Some people, their boss, you know, won't pay for Navigator, so they pay for it. And there's cash constraints to it. Whatever stack that you have, you're not leveraging it enough. Some competitor to you is going after the enterprise using more of their stack or a deeper stack. Lars Nilsson, you should definitely interview, is the VP at Snowflake. He runs their SDR team there. He was at Cloudera. He had Salesforce. He says that high growth companies, about 15%, even have a sequencer. And then he says, you know, leaders right now should be spending 1,000 per rep per month on tech stacks. So there's four myths that actually make more sense. Sales need to capitalize, and CROs should capitalize the sales department and SDRs as if it's marketing. One, hire more experienced people or have really solid training, invest in tech stacks and training on tech stacks, and then also strategic sales training. Because what is the what's the bullet in the gun? Like, you know, without a violent analogy, what are you putting in? What is your messaging, your story? How are you being strategic and reaching high-level buyers? Because if you're going to automate and amplify garbage or a transactional approach, it's just like speeds and feeds and features, it doesn't matter. So what's really weird about this book is I have, you know, an old school salesperson like Tony Hughes, where combo was all about, you have no tech and you're just doing these combos of like manual calls and voicemails and showing up. And then you have this environment of a 1,000 different technology tools. The old school and new school methods works. Taking strategic selling into social, taking a strategic set of messaging, making it really atomized like a text message, and then sending it in an automated touch pattern that's omni-channel, that works. So now you're using a cutting edge tactic and technology, and you're optimizing for recency, frequency, and relevancy. And you're then a C-level message, and then you could do 3 to 5x more. Now you're taking quality and amplifying. And so there's literally a maxim, which is, you know, good, fast, cheap, or quality over quantity. And so it's impossible. Like, you couldn't automate the phone or email and maintain quality. You can. You absolutely can with the current technology. That's what makes this revolutionary. If you couldn't, I don't know why $5 billion in VC would go into this market. I mean, these are savvy VCs. They're not looking for a place to lose money. What are your thoughts?
Well, you've said a lot of really interesting things, and I've got a number of thoughts, but one thing that stuck out was the term strategic sales training.
Yeah.
You know, that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. When you're thinking about strategic sales training and leveling people up for the modern day, what are the skills that you're trying to level up? What are the talents that you're looking for in people? You know, what does strategic sales training look like to you?
So I always look back to a series of leaders that taught this stuff. You know, there was a time during Big Hardware that there were training like, you know, Sandler, Miller Hyman, TAS, which is target account selling. Gosh, there's so many great systems out there. And then there's sort of think tanks like Challenger and Spin, and certain, you know, Spin's really a questioning framework. CEB and Challenger is another sort of framing and questioning framework. There's ties between all these books. But what is it about? It's actually not just about feature function benefit. It's not about competitors. We're now in this realm of politics and the way that enterprises are bureaucratic in the way they buy. They don't know how they buy. There's a lot of gridlock and dysfunction. So the Challenger customer, the second book that talks about the consensus sale, and it's almost like driving a political campaign. And how do you do that? You need to mobilize dozens of people. So, you know, when I was selling Sales Navigator, I would meet with the head of enablement, Scottsdale, Arizona, and then the head of sales in Canada, and then the head of sales in Europe. And I'd fly around meeting with people like a campaign. Then I demo Navigator to dozens and dozens of reps, because every leader is like, I care what the rep wants. What are our reps like? So you're in this climate now where it's not a fiefdom. It's not a fixed mindset where it's just, you know, the economic buyer. So it breaks Bant. And that's where things like Medic and MedPick are coming back. Now, Medic is actually 25 years old, was developed at PTC. People don't realize this. But it's because it's strategic and it's cutting like a hot knife right now, because we have the weaponization and we have the volumes. And so now what we're doing is going in reverse. It's like Benjamin Buttons, like the SDRs are making 150 emails a day. They're doing power dollars for 300, but what do they say? Well, there's pain, there's fear, there's neuroscience, persuasion, and right. There's a lot of really cool stuff you can study that's not really sales related. And I think it's strategic, because you're dealing with communication, advanced communication, and speeding it up. And that's where it's more like advertising and marketing. You know, marketing and advertising, and figure this out. They don't put an ad on the side of Facebook that says, I hope you're doing well. They have this tiny ad and they're spending millions of dollars in Facebook to get like that zero moment of truth, to get the intent to buy something. I was sitting around on Facebook 10 years ago, Peter Gabriel ad hit. And I clicked it, and it was like the perfect concert at the bowl right here. I bought it. It was the first time I ever converted off a Facebook ad, and then I never converted again. But it can be done, folks. Yeah.
Luckily, B2B is a little easier when you think about it that way. You know, I'm a fan of saying that B2C actually usually leads the B2B motion by about 5 years ish. Typically, with a lot of tactics and techniques, if you will, a lot of the things that you're talking about are very well understood, ingrained concepts in B2C especially. So I'd love to hear you kind of use the word mobilize, but the other word that, you know, you didn't say earlier about being cutting edge and marrying up kind of like classic techniques, Miller Hyman, Standler, Challenger, CEB, et cetera, with kind of modern tech, is really a deconstruction. Isn't that a word that you would use to talk about a lot of your methods?
It's in the book. It's deconstructed into first principles. What the heck does this mean? I mean, there's so much jargon. I poke fun at it. Elon Musk, I think the story holds, I'm going to tell it wrong, but he goes and says, I want to build rockets. And I think some government agency is like, great, get in line and we'll talk to you in 5 years. So he goes, okay, what's a rocket made out of? Beryllium. So he's like, okay, where's the beryllium mine? And he breaks down the fundamentals of what a rocket is and he just starts to build it. And it's what's really weird when I looked at the fundamentals of outbound, how it works. I work for a company called Outbound Works. Well, what is it? It's email that's automated and it's phone calls that are automated. And there's LinkedIn, which you can't automate. They don't really let you automate social. No matter how hard you try, there's little widgets and gimmicks. But if it worked, why would they shut down the friend inviter to 100 a month?
And getting harder every day, I might add.
Harder every day. So I thought, well, the two main arteries here that I need to deconstruct are going to be the email and the calling. And let me look at 20 years of software as a service. Like I think Cisco and Salesforce both had 50 million run rate in 2002. SDR was a thing. SDR was really codified in 2011 by Aaron Ross, what I like to say, the SDR AE industrial complex. That's my line. It's not necessarily bad, but what happens to the supply chain with Henry Ford and the automobile is the humans making the HubSpot give way and beget the machine and the AI robotic arm. And then there's humans making the software for the robotic arm and then the supply chain creating the arms. And, you know, it's the 767 sitting in Ireland and there's 7,000 suppliers. So we're moving to a fourth industrial a revolution setting where there's just going to be a really intricate supply chain. So the problem with email is traditionally in 20 years, emails have been about templates. Go say effective email and you get HubSpot templates and they dominate. Or you get Sales Hacker and that's great, it's templates. But the human brain doesn't see words. Words are pictograms and fonts are images that convey. The brain can't see a word. It translates the symbol into a thought. So when you see T-R-E-E, tree, immediately your brain pulls up a tree. Now, I don't know if yours looks like Candyland or a pine tree or Christmas tree or a palm tree, but you're not seeing the word tree when you look at tree. It brings you a tree. So I thought, wow, like why is email text-based. And the reason is spam filters. No one could get through the spam gate. So you know what they invented? Links. And so in the first email, you do a link to a PDF or you do a link to a video or you link out to something where you can go look at a picture. But I thought, wow, what I had really been big into SEM and SEO. So I thought there was this thing called CRO. It was really like popular in 2007, conversion rate optimization. And what it is like the Google homepage, someone used to send Marissa Meyer every day, 27, 25, 23. It was the reductionist view of how many words were on the Google page, because if we could get enough of it out of there, the conversion rates just kept going up. So I figured out, and I don't know how, I don't think I was the first person, how to nest images in line, not HTML in a way where it's big and heavy, but to take a little teeny image, like in Get Cloud App, like a GIF, because I'd seen really smart product marketers that had these really fast mobile responsive landers where it would pop and there would be a GIF that would play a resting moment inside a demo or an app. Picture's worth 1,000 words. Well, it turns out a picture conveys at 60,000 times faster than words. And 90% of what we retain is visual. So everything about email should be visual. So now I do a first email that's like a text message, a thoughts bump, and the third email is a Venn diagram. And it just, it's like a dopamine hit. It turns the whole brain on. So you're getting this quiet little text, and then suddenly you have this arresting picture or GIF. I don't know of anyone else who's built that system. I almost called it Venn selling. So that was like first deconstruction, is we're going to say that email is not templates, it's visuals. So I found one company, Dogpatch Advisors, and they were doing this stuff, but from an eng level where it would scrape out of your site and change the logos and change everything would dynamically change, hyper, like, you know, 200 emails, 200 different pictures, 200 different statements. I found PersistIQ, the CEO is using Shopify Liquid Syntax. So you have like dynamic script. It sees, here's a VP of sales. It writes this hook. Here's the C-level, but it's changing dynamically per template, per prospect, like in script. And I put that in the book, and I'm sure the publisher is like, I don't understand that computer code part. I don't either. I wrote it and I have no idea. some engineer put it in there. So that is the problem with email. Now let's deconstruct phone. I want to give you a pause though, just to see, you know, what you think of that, if you agree.
Hard to argue with tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years of cognitive development of humans, right? Like, You're really hitting into neuroscience and kind of how we orient to the world, which again, picture is worth 1,000 words, but the brain chemistry behind that dictates it so, right? Like even written language, spoken language, relatively recent on the human beings on roaming the earth kind of like time frame.
Yeah. So now I go, okay, well, I got to revolutionize phone. So first thing I figured out is like, okay, this whole thing that I have a, you know, I call my phone the burner phone because my brother works at Google. So I have a Google phone and I have plenty of yellow pads, you know, and I have pens. And you know what? If you drop me in an island with just a, you know, some kind of phone, a pad and a pen, I can create sales out of thin air just with my voice. I know how to do that. The problem is, if I can do that and someone with the same level of discipline, you know, who's done 10,000 or 20,000 hours on the phone can do what I do, but also has the tech stacks, that's problematic. And I call that outrunning the bear. We're all outrunning a bear and we're all buying better and faster running shoes. We've got Usain Bolt. He's going to outrun the bear. All we need is like a rusty beat up Vespa scooter and you'll all get eaten and I'll outrun the bear because the bear can't catch the scooter. The problem is it's like a competitive advantage. Is Henry Ford, they said they wanted faster horses. So like the Tesla version is that one SDR operator can be equal to 100 humans. So if I can program a sequencer, a sales engagement platform to send, you know, 150 emails per day, that's 3x a human manually sending. Now I feather that twice, 300 a day, now 450 a day. And I can get to the point where as one person, I can be more efficient and effective and even higher quality than an entire sales team. Here's what's crazy as I was working in mobile. And I know this sounds insane, but as one operator, I had more efficiency than the entire industry. With my three main competitors and every single sales team, I was outperforming the entire niche to the point where like a CMO would go, what is he doing? And they have me on the calls, tell him all this stuff. We do all these phone calls. Like, I'm going to do events. You know, he just like was intimidating. He didn't want to touch it to sound like an alien world. Remington Rawlings in the book is the same story about his automation is just getting so scaled. Now, it's much harder to do this now because of GDPR and CCPA. And I'm not saying I was ever violating that, but the book, the credo is to really stay small batch and personalized. The next question is, how do we change phone? What I have said for the 2020s is that emails, if you're sending them one at a time, you're in the dark ages. Phone, if you're dialing one at a time, not just to dial or dialing fast, but if you're not using something called a parallel assisted dialer that dials 4 to 10 numbers at once and then hot switches it in, because why would you spend 8 hours calling voicemails when you can spend 90 minutes, call 200 numbers, connect 20 times, 20 live contacts in the enterprise? That is like, like if you're really good at calling switchboards and have all the switchboards pre-programmed to get live fire on 20 people in the enterprise, it's going to take you 4 days, maybe a week. And I'm saying that you can do that in 90 minutes. And the reason that's important is then you can use that technology for AEs, because the plight of the AE is they have so much mid-funnel and down-funnel, they don't have time to prospect. But in the best SaaS companies I'm in, 60% is self-sourced for hunting AE. You can't rely on your SDRs to be handing you all your leads. So a lot of the AEs don't use outreach and they don't use sales loft, and there's no time for that. But what I was doing as a VP is I would cordon off my prospecting hours for here's an hour in the morning, hour at night on a power dialer, on a parallel assisted dialer. So connect and sell is an example. But then what to say? So the first problem everyone's having with phone is no one's connecting. So you solve that through technology. And the automation is 4 or 5 companies that make this tech. Now we're talking to humans again. But and now we can talk about theory, because like leaving voicemails is not phone. It's a marketing ad. Let me stop there. Do you guys?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because one of the things that we've incorporated at Science is parallel assisted dialing, is all the feature set that comes with it, such as local presence, such as voicemail drop, such as all the things that would take away from any of our callers not actually getting phone time. So I think it's a perfect segue into, hey, once we can reverse the time spent on, no one pays, no client pays us to watch people dial a phone, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's not value add. What's value add is at bats, is number of quality conversations with potential decision influencers. And that's really where the game's played.
Yeah, so there's so many authors and consultants and trainers who are pro phone, but without the technology, there's low contact rates. And you can buy cell phone data and you can get lucky and you can have streaks. And there's things like Lead IQ that are very high potent signal. Josh Braun talks about it in his course. He'd be a great person to interview too, because we have, I think, very similar theories on the subject. If we increase email, it just increases bounce rates. So email is really also about a data story, about getting the data and the targeting. You know, before you approach the improvements to email and phone, you have to take a RevOps lens to fixing it. The email problem is not what we're saying or writing in the templates or even the visuals. It's a data quality problem. Because if you light up a new email address and 30% of your data is bad, within the first 100 sends, your domain gets deprecated by 250 ISPs, and then you could have the most genius emails ever and they're not going to get delivered. So with email, we have to ensure deliverability and have the ability to automate. And then with phone, we have to get to the contact rates to even have live conversations. If you've done those two things, now we're playing in an era of 2007. We've taken a time machine. People see your emails and people answer your phone calls. Wow, we've actually returned to a pre-SDR environment called sales. The title actually falls away. 70% of what we do as an SDR right now is admin. So what I'm trying to do with the book is I'm trying to free up the human until we're communicating again. People are reading our emails. People are talking to us. Now, if you're talking to us, here's the weird thing. For 20 years, what is a script? What is the anatomy of the cold call? Again, it's a template and it's rebuttals. And the theory has always been its tone, because the neuroscience says 80 to 90% is the tone. And so people said, the power pose, Amy Cuddy on TED, I'm just going to stand up, wear my suit, have my tie, you know? That's not bad. I mean, if you're like super depressed on the phone, you're not going to sell. If you're just like, hey, it's Justin Michael, like Eeyore, you're like, isn't it an awful Tuesday? It's so foggy, you know, like Debbie Downer on the call, like that's not going to sell. However, being super happy and enthusiastic is very used car salesman. I know this is a hilarious movie. It's not safe for work, but with Will Ferrell, where he's like running a car dealership, everyone should watch it. It's just too good. but so tonality is huge, but what I found is power, like more like Aikido and power transfers and shifts. And where that comes from is really, it comes out of spin selling, but it comes because I actually wasn't just an SDR seller. I carried a bag. I did full cycle. What I would find, and I don't know where this came from, but in a 6 month to 2 year sales cycle, I even had sales where I started at one company and I closed the deal 3 years later, talking to them about the same tech, but I sold it at multiple companies. There, over time, finally, there's this magic moment where the prospect wants to do the deal. If it's not like that, you push and push and you're urgent, you're persuasive, and you close the deal, and then it just blows up. It's like dead on arrival. Like you get to CSM, you get to procurement, get through. And on the onboarding, like, what did we buy? Because they weren't bought in. They weren't driving the sale. What I found on phone calls when you're talking to people, if they don't become interested, there's never really a way. The show rates are so bad. And you can kind of fix it with Chili Piper. There's calendaring software, Chronologic, some of this stuff. But if they don't say, I'm interested, or this is something I want to do, and you're the one trying to get them to get on the meeting, trying to get them back in the funnel, you're pushing on a rope. So what I did is I designed some techniques where you kind of just letting them talk and pitching later, and you're waiting around. And I call it vampire theory, because in all these great 80s movies, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, like the vampire can't come in across the threshold until you invite them in. And they can't suggest it. They can't say, hey, can I come in? This is so weird. Like, it's the vampire rule. I don't know. Everyone who's watched a vampire movie. But if you make the mistake to invite them in, you're done. And salespeople and vampires, a lot in common, right? Oldest profession, lethal in some ways. Nobody really wants to talk to them. You know what I mean? And we try to elevate it. So here's the thing.
What's the garlic crossover?
I don't know. I don't have a garlic. Maybe with my chive superhuman skills instead of achieve, I'll link that to chives and garlic. But so my theory is I created this thing called Route, Ruin, Multiply in order to address this, which is the data is bad when you call. So I'm calling up for Harry Evans. When he goes, no, hey, it's Bill. Harry's gone. So I usually try to identify him. And then what's most phone scripts? The reason for my call. Why you, why now? Now, that's a great framework. But it's kung fu. It's not Aikido, because it's pugilistic by design. It's saying, I just interrupted you. I'm going to talk about me. So I created this thing like, hey, I'm interrupting you and I'm going to talk about you. So I'm trying to get routed. I'm then trying to validate the competitor. I have a series of pattern interrupts where I'm trying to pitch later and get them to talk and get them interested. So it's very unique framework. What's weird about it is Gong measures talk time, and Gong finds in the top sellers, there's like a 50-50 or 60-40 split. What's weird about my framework when it's run is sometimes you're going to call for 15 minutes and they're talking for 14 minutes. And even like with SDR teams, corporate SDR teams, they're like, well, that's going to ruin the talk time. I mean, I don't want my reps on the phone 15 minutes. They should cut bait there, go for the meeting, go for the meeting. When someone sits on a call and talks to you for 14 minutes about their life story, their cancer history, that they the battle they won, the model train collection, and people are listening to my calls like, wow, you're just like not focused and you're not in control of this call. But what happens is, like right after the call, they book the meeting with me. They bring four of their colleagues. They'll move heaven and earth if they can trust you. They want someone to talk to. They often say to me, hey, you just don't seem like a salesperson. You know, I wasn't even interested in this, but I like, thanks for being a good human. Like, can I just set you up? Like, I'm going to make the referral. One Friday night, I called a CRO on his boat and it was 4 o'clock. I was sitting in my backyard. He's like, oh, hey, you got me on the boat. And so I said, well, I'm sitting in my backyard at 4 p.m. making cold calls. And I said, how do I get on a boat? Like, you're doing something right in life. And I'm obviously not.
I'm on a boat.
He's like, you're on a boat. Okay, you're a boat. Is it your boat? And so I asked him like sincerely. He goes, and I was like, what do I have to do to get a boat? And he goes, you got to get old. I was like, well, I'm 41. He's like, no, you got to get real old. And then I don't even remember what he started saying, but I used the framework. He starts talking and talking and talking. But here's what's really weird. It's now like 4:15 on a Friday. He's on a boat. And I ask him for an intro to his, it was the CEO, the chief revenue officer. It says he'll do it. I get off the call while I'm on the exhibition doing more calls. Within 3 minutes, he emailed the chief revenue officer on his own and CC'd me. And everyone was shocked. It's alien. Like, you're interrupting a C-level executive on a boat after hours. They're doing all the talking and then they're the one writing the email follow-up, making sure that you can, do you see the polarity? They're driving this deal. How? Because if I create desire, someone can come. This marketers get this. They pull. And sellers just push. And they repel. And so whatever framework you use on the phone, you need to be using attraction marketing and a series of magnetic formulas And people like study relationship in science and dating, like there's a ton of parallels there, and sports and physics and Newton's law, but that's what I got.
You know, it's funny, you talked about polarity, and that's it's kind of a hint of a term that you talk about in your book, which is a polarity shift. And what you just described is exactly that. It's completely changing the direction of these conversations. It's changing even the expectation and the perception around them in the first place. Can you talk a little bit more about that? It's a huge theme in your book.
Yeah, I just had never seen this before. People love to buy and they hate to be sold. But you hear this all the time, and you always hear, you know, people, they get interested in emotion and they justify with logic, right? There's so many different strategies to talk about this, but how do you do it? And the way that you create trust on a call is when you're not talking. No amount of storytelling and convincing and emotion and pain and fear and interrogation, spin selling and question frameworks is going to make a person want to listen to you. If a busy executive has, you know, it was talked about by Mike Bosworth, who wrote Solution Selling, another amazing book. You get 7 slots. And I think it comes from Daniel Goleman, who's the father of emotional intelligence. Like a CMO, like I've talked about this before, Eric is sitting there and he's worrying about the same 5 to 10 things every day, usually 3 or 4. He's got to hire people. He's got to grow the top line. He's got to be innovative. He's got to share insight that keeps, you know, the content engine cutting edge. So if I come in there with a value prop that's aligned with what he's challenged by, actually, not some gimmicky pain or what's keeping me up at night, then all I'm doing is he's like digging a trench and I'm like, here, dig faster. Here's a laser cutter. You know, like I'm going right into what he's doing. So the reason the polarity shifts is because I'm able to align with his priority really quickly through relevance. And then the conversation flips. And I train people on this who've done base jumps. Like what they do is they do a FaceTime drop. I don't have, it's not me, but basically this guy named Chris Rokas, he started going into these CPG executives and getting in their iPhone and doing a FaceTime call. I don't think it's even regulated. I mean, it's so suddenly some executives like sitting there at their house and there's like Chris Rokas and they're like, did you really do that? Like they can't believe it's so violating and insane, a FaceTime drop. And he'd be like, it's a hard time. It's a pandemic. You know, I'm really sorry. Like, is it okay if like, it's just weird. Like you're just sitting there like on your patio and suddenly like the salesperson is in your personal, you know, phone on your, you know, where you're parents call you or your significant other, but it converted like crazy. They were like, you are so, it's weird. It's, I guess it was novel. He was having courage. You know, Brandon Bernanson from Seamless says he's tried this also. I have not tried it. The most radical thing I do is just calling really high board members, VCs, people that just you'd never want to call. And they're always really nice. So I train people that way. I know we're not really talking about the tech and the tech stacks, but we're talking about like what to put into the automation.
There were a few questions I was thinking about asking you even before we got on this call. And one of them you just kind of led right into, which is, you know, how do you talk about balancing the technical and the human aspects of sales development? I mean, one of the big topics in your book, and I believe you even considered it for a title, was talking about TQ, you know, technical quotient. And I've been a big proponent for a long time of the other four that people talk about, IQ, EQ, AQ, and CQ. But now TQ is a much more common topic. And, you know, it's something that you've been pushing for quite a while. So how do you look at TQ and how do you balance that with the human aspects of sales dev in a technological world?
Well, what's great is TQ comes from Psychology Today, technology quotient. It's also been called DQ or digital quotient. And I would argue it's a facet of AQ, adaptability quotient, because what we're doing is we're fusing with these hardware interfaces. We've been doing it a long time, all the way back from, you know, tanks in World War II to flying these planes and early machines compared to now. I mean, with 27 onboard computers in a normal car, this stuff was not easy to work. So what's weird is I did the research for technology quotient. I talked to people selling mainframes in the 90s and they would say, oh, wow. Yeah, this totally makes sense for my exact sales situation, 1987 or early 2000s. And so no matter what we're doing, you know, learning to water ski, playing guitar, I mean, there's a piece of hardware. So, you know, I actually came up doing music production and graphic design. And some of those user interfaces, especially at the time, were very hard to do. Took a lot of configuration and it was very precise. We have to merge with our UI, UX. I think I got this from, gosh, I'm not sure. It could have been Eric who said it, but we have to move from Excel to SQL. So I've seen these two huge trends is that there's citizen developers now. The coding and the tech stacks, it's intuitive. It's not that hard. You don't have to code. So if you are very good with math, learn to code. And if you're good with really good with math, get into RevOps and get into data science and engineering and analysis. But if you're not, get very adept at these user interfaces and their WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. So, you know, the reason I was able to learn this stuff really fast is that when you actually look at it, it's user-friendly. SalesLoft is very user-friendly. Outreach, you can learn it in 2 hours. This is not, you know, advanced, you know, orthoscopic surgery equipment or, you know, configuring a laser. This stuff is made to be intuitive. It's for codeless, you know, analysts. So what's weird is a lot of salespeople are like, I'm not technical. Or the sales leader is like, we're not that technical. We're old school. When you say we're old school, your competitor just won. Someone just took a $1 billion deal you didn't see. Well, I was in this company and we've been Antwerp, Belgium, show up for a meeting and there's the competitor that day. Every time. Why? Because the competitor was on page one of Google. And anytime you're going to buy anything, admit it, if you're listening to this call, you go to Google and you type it in, look, competitors of, you go to G2 Crowd, Capterra, and you look. So we got RFP, no matter how early we were in the deal, the competitor is always there because their web presence was astoundingly good. You know, if your team is doing 25 emails a day and your competitor is sending 300 a day and working with a third party, they're just lapping you on volume and quality. And you're just this tiny little voice. You're creating a David versus Goliath situation. If you're first into these tech stacks because other people are incredulous, you're ahead. You have a competitive advantage. Here's a really weird question I get. Okay, let's say all this happens. 5 billion goes in the tech stacks and now everyone has hyper-personalized emails and everyone's got the calling machines. What happens? Here's the problem, saturation. Eric is getting 1,000 emails per day. He's getting 600 phone calls per day. And that's why I think what Brendan Cassidy is building, CoSell.io, is really interesting. Referrals and affiliate networks, meaning if like I sell analytics, but you sell products analytics, two different analytics solution, but the same sort of product lead, we work together and we even go to the sales call together. You know, you're going to need the web analytics, but you're going to need the product analytics. Let's partner and lead share, and it's in the interest of the customer. So co-selling is really interesting.
One of the other things that you brought up that also is really interesting and kind of in what I would call, you know, the wheelhouse of the marketer. But, you know, I've been on a little bit of a campaign, a jihad, if you will, to convince the world that, and we've even coined the term, we call it outbound assist. And one of the things that's really interesting about when you run kind of an enterprise sales development motion and you're front running kind of outbound, if you can marry it up with everything you're doing on the marketing side as part of your go-to-market, what ends up happening is you're going to have a lot of tertiary benefits that you can't directly attribute. They're not going to show up on, you know, kind of like any of your attribution software sheets. In fact, what will end up happening is you're going to start to see with really successful enterprise sales development motions, a lot more direct traffic to your website. And direct traffic, for those not, you know, familiar with it, is basically when you're using Google Analytics or Adobe or any other HubSpot tracking software where it doesn't know what to stick the visitor into a bucket of. Right. So anyone coming off of an email, anyone has cookies turned off, anyone using an incognito browser, anyone who's refreshing that browser after already having visited you, anyone typing in your domain name fresh, like right off the hitch, all direct traffic and all fed by outbound. And so the really interesting thing there is like exactly what you said. Hey, Google, that's where everyone starts their search. If you think of your outbound sales development motion as being an assist to every inbound motion you make, all of a sudden you attack the problem completely differently, much like you're saying here with co-selling, much like you're saying here with how do you fight saturation or how do you go with saturation to create successful situations for engagement?
It's such a hard question. You know, I've looked at every tool I could think of and every family of tool on the market, even GPT-3, even Google Duplex, even deepfakes, like the machines are making the cold calls, the buyers and sellers are machines, the automation of the buying and the selling and the marketplace and the referrals, all of it. What is the future? Well, what's interesting then is I talked to employee number 10 from Marketo, who's at a company called Syncery. It's an awesome data solution. and his name's Scott. And he basically said, look, no one cold calls me. If someone even tries, I take the meeting. And then I talked to another executive and he goes, the last 1,000 emails I got were just templates with bullets. Like it was high first name and not even a single indication of they read the LinkedIn profile or tried. So outrunning the bear. So basically what's happened is human nature is path of least resistance and lazy. The vast majority are just, it is just pure automation. They're amplifying junk. So how do you just, if you take one thing away from this call or the book, if you're just a little bit better, if you just try something to be thoughtful, to put some care into your messaging, in your campaign. Now, when I configure the campaigns, it takes me more time. You see, I have to set up the robotic system in the supply chain. I don't just sit down on outreach.io and start going and sending hundreds of personalized emails, right? There's data, research, analysis. What are these trigger events? What are the ICPs, the personas? All that traditional stuff is happening. And then if you're going to do sophisticated personalization at scale, you're using custom fields, using different data sources. You have to ingest certain spreadsheets, so certain columns will change. Like one cool thing you can do is technographic drops. You can go to HD Insights, you can get a list of accounts and figure out, okay, here's what their MarTech stack is. The average enterprise company has 91 solutions in their MarTech stack. So let's say you sell like some kind of DMP like mParticle or some kind of wrapper system like Segment that is an SDK API integrator. What I mean is it ties a bunch of solutions together. Well, then you can have emails that go, I see you're using Lean Data, Marketo, and right, and Drip. Like you could actually just drop it in per company. So the email automatically drops these technographics that are specific. It's kind of cool. It's kind of gimmicky. I don't know if you would know a machine was doing that. And it's different every single prospect or at the account level. I was involved in a company that was doing that with sentences. And I think in the very near future, we're going to see sequencers that have the data sitting there, the conversation intelligence, and even the writing and the templates are being done by machines and suggesting, here's a sequence that you'd probably want to write that's performed well with your colleagues or throughout the industry in this vertical. And then it just populates it and you slightly refine it and then go.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of the different optimizations you've talked about recently, it seems like you're focused on conversion over volume metrics for the most part. You did talk about obviously using technology to leverage more emails, more calls, but for the most part, you've talked about getting more connections, getting more people to respond, getting more engagements rather than go make 1,000 more phone calls a day. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I've been in operations and I've been the person on the hook for buying the technology or for running the team. And the North Star KPI is like, it's revenue. And how do you get revenue? You need customers. And how do you get customers? You need conversions. So meetings are meaningless. We've all had to process a bucket of MQLs after an event and none of them, it's just air. So meetings are not really a thing. Opportunities, if they don't have a compelling event, it's just kicking a can. It's a hope in the pipe. The most important thing is the compelling event or compelling reason. So like for me, I'm completely focused on opportunity generation, never leads. Because what I want to do is I want to create a qualified opportunity that has the propensity to actually close so that I can create a customer. So if I have a really high reply rate, I don't know, it could be negative sentiment, take me off the list. If I'm just blitzing to get low-hanging fruit, I'm burning out my TAM, my target addressable market. I'm very scarce in the enterprise about what the funnel looks like, because I might have 200 accounts only, or I might have 2,000 or 3,000. And if I automate too fast or I hit too many targets, I'll get the low-hanging fruit, the 3% of the market, but I'll burn out the TAM. So I want to, you know, there's a creed in here, small batch, hyper-relevant, personalized. It is automated, but it's thoughtful. So I did this thing called relevance at scale. Take 1,000 people, turn into 5 campaigns. 200 here, 200, 200 here. So this is like 200 VPs of marketing in e-commerce. Now here's 200 CXOs in e-commerce. Now here's 200 VPs of marketing in automotive. You know, and so by then having a message and social proof and one message to those 200 people that's very hyper-personalized, I don't have to try to find Occam's razor or like a through line to buckets of thousands of people. The small batch automations are very effective and it's more like traditional prospecting.
So it sounds like you're fine with low-hanging fruit, but you're picking fruit from the tree, not chopping the tree down and taking everything at once.
It's true. And intent is a really crazy, huge breakthrough is in large TAMs, if you have 10,000 accounts or 5,000 accounts, asymmetric warfare is the key, like the 80-20 rule. Can you use an intense system? You think of Bambora, Sixth Sense, this thing called Albacross, to be prescient about what to work. What are the 10% of this list that I want to hit, 20%, before I go after it? You know, that's, like I said before, for the deconstruction is, why would I even contact the list? So a lot of the innovation now is on intent and psychographics, is knowing in advance which accounts are likely to buy. And there's a lot of signals and algorithms that get ingested to be able to predict that and still be anonymous and compliant. You can basically start to see where executives are clicking on different blogs, and you can kind of like infer things. So that's a hot space to check out. And for the leaders listening on the call, you should be looking through intent data.
Intent's funny too, because there's so many different flavors and everyone like shoves them all into one big bucket, which I think is a mistake, to be perfectly honest. Especially because if you're running an outbound motion, very similar to the, you know, conversation we were having just a few minutes ago, the first party intent data that everybody has access to is who's visiting you on your website. And provided you're kind of warning people, you can pull cookie data and cross-reference it and figure out, like, down to the contact level who those people are.
Yeah.
You know, because ultimately, they came to your site.
There's a lot of new technologies in play, and you got to make a decision whether you're going to be focused on results or focused on optics. That's why I always joke that I'm like a bright guru, because I open source the stuff in my book. I put it on Reddit. It's gilded. I have 2,000 people in this group called Salesborgs, and all we do is talk about teardowns of email and phone calls. And maybe there is intellectual property to it. You have a system, you don't want anyone to know. But the truth is, the meta system is we're all just communicating and we do want results. And I don't know how you get to results without the conversions. So that's why I take pride when somebody I trained doesn't just set a lot of meetings. Oh, they got a ton of meetings. It's like they got promoted because they're generating a ton of revenue. Like my favorite response is they brought a ton of revenue in the door, because that's what the business is ultimately. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, a bronze or a, you know, the blue ribbon moment is when you create customers. You're so confident as a prospector that you're creating business for your company. That's the actual end all be all. And they're happy. But that's up to picking product market fit and being with a good company. I wouldn't take as much pride in the vanity metrics, like how high your open rates are or how many meetings you got, or I automated it and I got 50 meetings this month. Well, what about one meeting for seven figures over, you know, 20, $10,000 pilots? Like, what's the output? Start to take pride in the actual business impact. That's what I would say.
You know, we hear that from our clients constantly. We're constantly working with new clients, looking at what kind of a sales development process would be best, what's going to target their ICP. And everyone has a goal. Everyone says we want to get 5 meetings a week or 10 meetings a week, whatever the number is. But there's always that caveat. If you get us these three companies, it'll pay for you for the next 3 years. And that's always thrown in there. Because at the end of the day, to your point, it's about revenue. It's about the money they're trying to make from these meetings. You know, we can set a goal of 10 meetings a week, set them 20. And if they just keep not converting and people keep not showing up, we're not going to have a client for very long. Whereas we might set a goal of 10, but if we get 8 and they just keep converting into high value deals, we'll never hear a word from that client, not in a million years.
That's what's so funny. Everybody wants their beautiful metrics and to have it all benchmarked to the Bridge Group. And that's awesome. If you have a real pure SaaS transactional model, it's great. But enterprise is lumpy. And so you are kind of harpooning whales. You're hunting for whales. And, you know, a few deals could offset the whole group. So what you want to do is create a consistent outbound motion and tech stack that's going to, you know, optimize you statistically for the highest possibility. So it's almost like building a lobster trawler and a spearfishing operation at the same time. What's paradoxical about the highest level of outbound automation, I'll quote Brian Franklin, who was the co-founder of Outboundworks, is he would say, you have to hold the paradox. Like one of the greatest measures of intelligence is to hold two opposing ideas that are in conflict together at the same time in your mind. So we're talking about quality messaging to C-levels, and then we're talking about Iron Man. That doesn't seem like it's gonna go together, but that's really what AI is gonna bring us. That's the scary thing, is we can finally break the barrier of quality over quantity and do a quantity of quality. And now I sound like, you know, Donald Rumsfeld, or like the unknown unknowns. I sound like I'm just literally just hot air. But I think people who are listening to this who are trying to crack it will laugh because that is the problem.
Those who have done this know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's a good ending point. I mean, I'd love for people to buy the book. Some people, they look at it, they're like, it's a techie book. It's not for me. It's not what you think. I call it RevOps because it talks about tech stacks, but this is a tactical manual. If you're a sales development rep now, this is the way to do it. There's over 80 people interviewed in here, hundreds of tools, but it's not like a textbook. It's like, you know, when I wrote it, I thought, how could I do predictable revenue like a SQL? Or how could I do like the anarchist cookbook? For those of you in the 80s and 90s, like one kid would have it in the neighborhood and be like buried in a tree stump and no one's allowed to have the book. This basically lowers the veil on, in some ways, third-party appointment setting. What are the best teams in the entire world ever who use automation do? And it's all in here. And what's funny is usually those folks just want people to know that they do that so that they can get hired because it's really hard to do it right. And I was involved with a company that did it and I've sent millions of emails. And so, yeah, check this out. That's what I got.
Justin, this has been a phenomenal episode. And I do fully endorse the book, not just because I'm quoted in it, but like it is well worth reading. I agree that the SDR is kind of the primary target. But boy, if the SDR managers, directors, and leaders are not also reading this book, they're flying blind. They're flying blind. And you can't afford that in today's day and age when you've literally unwrapped and given them kind of the gift of the future. You pulled it, you know, the abstract future into the present and made it concrete around here's what's really going on. Here's really how to think about outbound and enterprise sales development. And so for that, you know, I'm thankful and all the listeners out there should be as well. So go get your copy now available.
Yeah. So I, you know, when I first wrote this article called Beyond Sales Development, Sales Runner 2049, and I quoted Tomas Tunguz from Redpoint. He was in the Chorus deal. I've since sent him this book and he did respond. He's very respectful about it because I quoted him here about the CRM of the future. It doesn't just log your opportunities. It goes and gets them. It sends robots out and it gets them. That's my paraphrasation. The SDR problem, simple. Just, you know, block and tackle, bang the phone, send the email. That's not the problem anymore. Revenue operations, data operations, marketing operations, this is the future. And the mechanization of sales and sales tooling, it's a C-level problem. The vast majority of my clients are CXOs. I don't have a college degree. I usually don't even wear a collared shirt. This is actually a rare day. I'm normally just kicking around Santa Barbara.
We're honored.
You know, but it's because they really want to figure out not just predictable revenue, but they want to figure out a way to create the efficiency and use all the technologies they're hearing about. It's just like in MarTech, the top CMOs want to know what are the little AI startups that I can use to have my edge. So if you're listening to this and you want a competitive advantage and you want to be doing something that for sure won't happen until 2025, this is not 2035. This is not a hoverboard. The other challenge I did to myself is most of the book is stuff that can currently be pulled off or is super relevant in the next 2 to 3 years. That's what made it much harder to do the work. This has to hold up in 5 years and 10 years. And I could go on forever. I know I'm over time.
No, that's all right. The book's fantastic. All of your comments, they have been fantastic as well. I recommend everybody check it out. And I also recommend you follow Justin online. He's a great thought leader. He's got a lot of contributions to the space. So Justin, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for sharing everything you did with our audience. And happy Friday.
Thanks so much. Thank you both.